The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back, everyone, to the deep dive. Today we're tackling a really significant book, one that feels, well, almost uncomfortably relevant right now. It's Karl Popper's The Open Society and Its Enemies, written back in 1945.
It's a huge work, and you're absolutely right. The ideas in it just keep resonating, don't they?
Definitely. So our goal for this deep dive is to really get under the skin of Popper's core argument, understand his intellectual defense of freedom.
Yeah, and how he unpacks the philosophical ideas that he argues lead towards totalitarianism. It's quite the intellectual detective story.
He makes the case that these threats, whether they look ancient or modern, often stem from the very same kind of toxic thinking.
Exactly. And it's written with such passion. It's a real defense of what he calls liberal democracy.
Mm.
I think what makes it so crucial today is how it directly confronts something deeply human, that desire for absolute certainty.
Certainty. Interesting.
Yeah, the promise that someone, somewhere, has the final answer, the perfect plan. Popper identifies this as the great danger, and he traces its roots back. Gosh, thousands of years.
Which leads us straight into this key concept we need to grasp early on, historicism.
Historicism. That's the one.
It might sound a bit, you know, academic, but for Popper, this is the main villain of the piece, the biggest intellectual threat to an open society.
It's absolutely central to his whole argument. Basically, historicism is the belief that history isn't just a jumble of events, but that it unfolds according to some kind of fixed, predictable laws.
Almost like laws of nature.
Kind of, yes. That there's a predetermined destiny for humanity, a path that history must follow, leading to some inevitable endpoint.
And the believers, the historicists, think they know what that endpoint is, usually something perfect.
Precisely. Often it's framed as a utopia, a perfect society waiting for us if we just follow the script.
Okay, so the danger isn't just believing history moves forward. It's the conviction that you know the exact final destination.
Yes. And that this supposed knowledge gives you the right, even the duty, to do whatever it takes now to reach that glorious future. It essentially turns political figures into prophets.
And Popper saw this as fundamentally flawed and dangerous.
He called it intellectually bankrupt and inherently totalitarian. Because if you possess that certainty about the future, why tolerate debate or individual freedom today? Especially if they seem to stand in the way of that preordained outcome.
Right. Okay, so let's get to know the thinker behind this critique. Tell us a bit about Sir Karl Popper himself.
Well, Sir Karl Popper lived from 1902 to 1994. He was an Austrian-British philosopher, a real giant in 20th century thought, influencing both philosophy of science and political philosophy significantly. He started out in Vienna, right in the middle of all the intellectual ferment and, unfortunately, the political chaos of the early 20th century.
And his background in science is crucial, isn't it? Even for his political thought. He's famous for this idea of falsifiability.
Hugely important. Falsifiability is, you could say, his litmus test for what counts as genuine science. The core idea is quite straightforward. For a theory to be considered scientific, you have to be able to conceive of some evidence, some observation, that could potentially prove it false.
So if a theory can twist itself to explain absolutely anything that happens,
then it's not really explaining anything specific, is it? If no possible evidence could refute it, Popper says it's not science, it's closer to dogma, unfalsifiable.
And his perspective on totalitarianism wasn't just theoretical, was it? He lived through its rise.
Not at all. He was deeply affected by it. Being an Austrian of Jewish descent, he saw the rise of fascism up close.
Yeah.
It forced him to flee Austria. He went to New Zealand in 1937. And incredibly, he wrote The Open Society during World War II. He actually saw it as his contribution to the war effort, fighting the ideologies of Hitler and Stalin with ideas.
Wow. So he connects his scientific thinking directly to politics.
He absolutely does. That's the breakthrough insight, really. He applied the same critical rationalism, the demand for evidence, for testing, for openness to being proven wrong to political systems. The aha moment is seeing that a healthy political system, like a good scientific theory, must be open. Open to criticism, open to peaceful change, open to being refuted or improved.
And totalitarianism is the opposite.
It's the definition of a closed system. It actively shields itself from criticism, relying on dogma and suppressing dissent.
Okay, so the book has this dual aim: diagnose the philosophical illness, historicism, and champion the alternative, the open society.
Exactly. The open society isn't about perfection. It's grounded in reason, individual freedom, and crucially intellectual humility, that willingness to admit we might not have all the answers. And the thinkers he critiques most fiercely, Plato, Hegel, and Marx, he argues they were all pursuing different versions of a perfect, unchanging, closed society, which inherently clashes with critical thinking and progress.
So, if chasing utopia is dangerous, what's Popper's alternative? What should we be doing instead?
Well, he argues against these grand revolutionary schemes to remake society wholesale. Instead, he advocates for something much more modest, more practical. He calls it piecemeal social engineering.
Piecemeal engineering. It doesn't exactly sound thrilling, does it, compared to revolution?
Huh. No, it sounds rather boring, like fixing a dripping tap instead of designing a futuristic city.
Yeah.
But that's precisely its strength, according to Popper. It means focusing on solving specific, identifiable problems, tackling poverty, improving health outcomes, fixing injustices you can actually point to. You do it through small-scale, rational, testable changes.
Trial and error, basically.
Exactly. Learn as you go. Fix what's demonstrably wrong, rather than trying to impose some huge abstract vision of the good life from the top down, which risks massive unintended consequences.
Right, let's get into the details of his critiques now, because this is where he really pulls no punches. Volume 1 is titled The Spell of Plato. We usually think of Plato's Republic as this ideal state, but Popper reads it very differently.
Oh, completely differently. He sees it as essentially the philosophical cornerstone for totalitarian thought. Plato's main goal, in Popper's reading, wasn't future progress. It was actually reactionary.
Reactionary? How so?
He argues Plato wanted to halt all political change, to free society, maybe even revert to some imagined past golden age characterized by stability and strict hierarchy. So inherently anti-democratic, anti-progress.
That really flips the script on how we understand Plato's concept of justice. We hear justice and think fairness, equality.
But for Plato, Popper argues, justice meant something quite different. It meant stability through rigidity, maintaining the fixed class structure. Philosopher kings rule, warriors defend, workers produce. Everyone stays in their designated box.
So justice was knowing your place and staying there.
Pretty much. Individual ambition, trying to move between classes, that was seen as a threat to the stability, to the justice of the whole system. It's justice's unchanging order, not dynamic fairness.
And this leads him to criticize what he calls utopian social engineering, the idea of radically redesigning society from scratch.
Yes, because if you have this grand blueprint for the perfect state and you try to implement it radically from the top down, well, you inevitably end up treating actual people as mere obstacles or tools. Popper warns this kind of grand-scale utopianism always risks leading to violence and oppression. People's lives get sacrificed for the sake of this promised future perfection.
It's fascinating that he contrasts Plato so sharply with Socrates, Plato's own teacher.
Yes, he paints Socrates as the real hero of the open society, the relentless questioner, the individualist, committed to critical dialogue. Popper saw Plato as tragically betraying that Socratic spirit, turning it into a justification for dogmatic authority.
Okay, so if Plato laid some ancient groundwork, Volume 2, The High Tide of Prophecy, tackles the modern thinkers Popper sees as enabling totalitarianism, starting with Hegel.
Ah, Hegel, notoriously difficult philosopher.
Understatement.
Right. Popper basically argues Hegel took Platonic ideas about the state and stability, mixed them with a potent dose of nationalism, and essentially deified the state itself. He accuses Hegel of creating this deliberately obscure, oracular philosophy that served, maybe conveniently, to legitimize the existing power structures of his time specifically, the Prussian monarchy. The state becomes the ultimate expression of historical reason.
Then we come to Marx, and this critique feels different, doesn't it? Popper seems to have maybe a grudging respect for Marx.
He does, in a specific way. Popper acknowledges Marx's genuine moral outrage, his deep concern for the suffering of working people under industrial capitalism in the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
He respects the humanitarian impulse behind it all, but he absolutely demolishes Marx's methodology. Marx, according to Popper, fell victim to historicism in a big way, creating what Popper calls economic historicism.
Meaning he believed history was driven by these inescapable economic laws.
Exactly. Marx claimed to have discovered the iron laws of history, primarily driven by class struggle. And these laws didn't just explain the past. They allowed him to make prophecies about the future.
The famous prophecies. Capitalism's inevitable collapse, violent revolution, the rise of a classless communist society.
Those are the ones. But here's where Popper applies his scientific test. what actually happened in history.
Well, those specific prophecies didn't really pan out, did they?
Not in the way Marx predicted. The middle class didn't disappear, it grew. Working conditions often improved through gradual reforms and legislation, not just revolution. The state didn't wither away. In many cases, it became stronger.
So the predictions were, in scientific terms, falsified.
They were. And here's the crucial point for Popper, the indictment of all historicism. When the evidence contradicted the theory, what happened?
Instead of revising the theory or admitting it might be wrong,
followers tended to protect it. They'd add explanations, reinterpret the prophecies, find ways to make the theory fit the facts after the event. They turned Marxism, Popper argues, from a potentially scientific hypothesis into an unfalsifiable dogma.
And that resistance to criticism, that closing off from contradictory evidence, is the absolute hallmark of a closed system, a closed society.
Precisely. So stepping back from the individual enemies, what are the big positive takeaways Popper offers us for thinking about our own societies?
Well, the first one feels fundamental. The open society is a way of doing things, a process, not some final perfect state we arrive at.
Exactly. It's defined by its institutions and its attitude. Commitment to critical discussion, mechanisms for peaceful reform, and the shared understanding that our knowledge is always incomplete, always provisional. The minute we think we've found the final perfect answer and shut down debate, that's when the openness starts to die.
And second, that idea of piecemeal engineering really lands differently now. It's not about lacking ambition, it's about being effective and humane.
Right. The focus shifts. Instead of trying to engineer maximum happiness, which is vague and subjective, the goal becomes minimizing concrete, avoidable suffering, poverty, illness, injustice, things we can actually identify and tackle.
It's a more modest but maybe more achievable goal. Focus on reducing the bad stuff rather than imposing one version of the good stuff.
And it demands accountability. You can measure progress against specific evils. It also minimizes the risk of those catastrophic failures that grand utopian schemes are prone to.
And third, Popper urges us to ask a different fundamental political question, not Plato's question, who should rule, which often leads to looking for the wisest or the chosen one.
Which can easily slide into elitism or tyranny.
Right. Instead, Popper says the crucial democratic question is, how can we design our institutions so that we can get rid of bad or incompetent rulers without resorting to violence?
That shift is everything. It moves the focus from the virtues of the rulers to the strength and design of the institutions. Checks and balances, elections, peaceful transitions of power. That's the core of democratic control.
It's no wonder the book is so full of memorable lines. He really distills these huge ideas.
He does. One of the most famous capturing his critique of utopianism is, "The attempt to make heaven on earth invariably produces hell."
Stark. It highlights the danger of political perfectionism.
It does. Forcing a perfect vision onto imperfect reality tends to require force and crush freedom.
Another really vital idea, especially today, is the paradox of tolerance.
Ah, yes. Very relevant. Popper argues that a society that values tolerance cannot ultimately tolerate intolerance that aims to destroy the tolerant framework itself.
Meaning,
if a group actively works to undermine democratic institutions, spread hatred, and shut down free speech, a tolerant society has the right, even the duty, to defend itself and restrain that intolerance. Unlimited tolerance would lead to the disappearance of tolerance.
It's a tough balancing act, but necessary to protect the open society itself.
Absolutely. And then there's that quote, summarizing the goal of piecemeal reform. Instead of the greatest happiness for the greatest number, one should demand, more modestly, the least amount of avoidable suffering for all.
Again, that focus on reducing harm, on practical compassion.
It shifts the moral focus. And perhaps the ultimate takeaway, rejecting destiny and embracing our own agency, is captured in this thought. We may become the makers of our fate, when we have ceased to pose as its prophets.
Stop trying to predict the inevitable future and start taking responsibility for creating a better present.
Exactly. Reject historicism. Embrace critical reason and action.
So how can we apply these powerful ideas in our everyday lives? They seem quite practical, actually.
They really are. Take the falsifiability test. You encounter a grand theory, maybe online, maybe in the news, a political claim, an economic prediction.
Happens all the time.
Right. Just ask yourself, what evidence could possibly prove this wrong? If the person promoting it can't answer that or says nothing could prove it wrong, well, that's a huge red flag. You might be dealing with dogma, not a rational argument.
That's a useful filter. And what about piecemeal engineering, maybe in, say, a workplace?
Definitely. Instead of launching massive, top-down, revolutionary changes that often fail spectacularly, think incrementally, Run pilot projects, try A/B testing, gather real feedback, make small, evidence-based improvements.
Less risk, more learning. Sounds like agile methodology almost.
It shares that spirit, yes. It's about acknowledging you don't have all the answers up front and being willing to adapt based on results. It's applying fallibilism, the acceptance that you might be wrong.
And that leads to the personal mindset shift, doesn't it? Adopting fallibilism and how we talk to each other.
Absolutely. It means entering conversations not just to win or to prove you're right, but with a genuine willingness to find the flaws in your own thinking. Actively seek out criticism. That humility is maybe the ultimate antidote to the kind of certainty that Popper warned us about.
What really struck me revisiting this for our deep dive is how the open society isn't just some historical academic exercise. It feels like an urgent living argument. It makes you realize that political freedom isn't guaranteed. It depends on this ongoing intellectual commitment to reason, criticism, and, well, humility.
That's perfectly put. That's the enduring power of the book. The temptation of certainty, the lure of the simple answer, the promise of a perfect future delivered by prophets, that's a constant human vulnerability. Popper's lasting message is that every generation has to actively choose the open society over the closed one. It means embracing the discomfort of uncertainty and taking up the hard work of critical thinking because freedom depends on it.
A powerful reminder.
Indeed.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akhotra Foundation.